Castillo and Miller took seats halfway down the table across from Weiss, who looked at Castillo but gave no sign of recognition.
"If I may have your attention, ladies and gentlemen," Ellsworth said, "now that Lieutenant Colonel Castillo, who is the representative of the Department of Homeland Security, has joined us, we can get this underway."
"You pompous son of a bitch. Should I have brought a note from my mommy saying why I'm late?"
"My name is Truman Ellsworth. Ambassador Montvale had other things on his plate this morning and sent me to represent him. This is, as I said, an informal meeting, but in view of the sensitive material which may come to light, a top-secret security classification is in place, and it is not to be recorded." "As I understand it," Ellsworth went on, "the Attorney General and the DNI, Ambassador Montvale, are agreed that there may well be intelligence aspects to the kidnapping of a DEA agent in Paraguay, and that it behooves us to share, informally, what information we have which might shed light on the situation. May I suggest that the principals identify themselves? Why don't we work our way around the table?"
He sat down and nodded to a swarthy man on his right.
"John Walsh, DEA,"
the man said.
"Helena Dombrowski, State Department," a somewhat plump, red-haired woman announced.
"Norman Seacroft, Treasury."
He was a slight, thin man in a baggy suit.
"Milton Weiss, CIA."
"Colonel K.L. Dubois, DIA."
The representative of the Defense Intelligence Agency was tall and wiry and wore his hair clipped almost to the skull.
"C.G. Castillo, Homeland Security."
"Inspector Bruce Saffery, FBI."
Saffery was a well-tailored man in his early 50s. Castillo thought, "I wonder if he knows Inspector John J. Doherty."
"Excuse me,"
Colonel Dubois said, looking at Castillo and holding up his index finger,
"but didn't Mr. Ellsworth just refer to you as Lieutenant Colonel?"
"Ellsworth, you son of a bitch. I'm not wearing a uniform. You didn't have to refer to me as an officer. And why do I think that wasn't an accident?"
"Yes, sir, I believe he did."
"You're a serving officer?"
"Yes, sir."
"And presuming I'm allowed to ask, what exactly is it you do for the Department of Homeland Security, Colonel?"
"Sir, I'm an executive assistant to the Secretary."
"How much do you know about the Office of Organizational Analysis?"
"Aside from that we're using their conference room, sir, not much."
"The reason I'm asking, Colonel, is that I was ordered to transfer one of my officers, a young lieutenant who was stationed in Asuncion, to the Office of Organizational Analysis."
"Oh, shit, Lorimer."
Castillo glanced at Truman Ellsworth and saw that he was looking at him. Ellsworth's face was expressionless, but he was looking.
"His name is First Lieutenant Edmund J. Lorimer," Dubois pursued.
"I just can't help you, Colonel," Castillo said. "This meeting hasn't even started, and I'm already lying through my teeth to a fellow officer who looks like a nice guy."
"Perhaps you could ask Secretary Hall, Colonel Castillo,"
Ellsworth suggested helpfully.
"Oh, you miserable son of a bitch."
"Yes, I suppose I could do that," Castillo said. "I'll get back to you, Colonel, if I'm able to find out anything."
"I'd appreciate it," Dubois said. "He's a nice young officer who lost a leg from above the knee in Afghanistan. I've been sort of keeping an eye on him."
"I'll see what I can find out for you, sir, as soon as this meeting is over."
"I'd really appreciate it, Colonel."
"Why don't we start with you, Mr. Walsh?"
Ellsworth said.
"Exactly what happened in Asuncion?"
Walsh took 10 minutes to report in minute detail less than Castillo already knew. He didn't mention the garrote with which Timmons's driver had been murdered, just that he had been killed, means unspecified. Castillo decided he either hadn't been told how the driver had been killed, or had, and didn't understand the significance. Without saying so, in so many words, Walsh made it clear that he thought the DEA could get Timmons back by themselves if certain restrictions on what they could do were relaxed. Mrs. Dombrowski of the State Department took the same amount of time to explain the excellent relations enjoyed by the United States with the Republic of Paraguay, expressed great admiration for the Paraguayan law enforcement authorities, and made it clear, without saying so in so many words, that she strongly felt it would be a diplomatic disaster if a cretin like Walsh was allowed to destroy the aforesaid splendid relationship by going down there guns blazing and taking the law into his own hands. Mr. Seacroft of the Treasury Department somewhat jocularly said that while he wasn't much of an admirer of anything French, he did think it was hard to disagree with their criminal investigation philosophy of searching for the money, and announced that he was going to run everything he had through the computers again and see what came out the other end. Castillo had glanced at Ellsworth several times during Mr. Seacroft's discourse. Castillo had seen from Ellsworth's look of utter contempt that he, too, knew that the French criminal investigation philosophy was chercher la femme, though their seeking of femme meant women, not money. Milton Weiss of the CIA said that he had to confess being a little surprised at the attention the kidnapping of Special Agent Timmons was getting. He had heard, unofficially, of course, that it was a not uncommon occurrence, perhaps even common, and that in the end the drug thugs usually turn the kidnappee free. He implied that the agency had far more important things to do than worry about one DEA agent who, it could be reasonably assumed, had some idea of what he was getting himself into when he first became a DEA agent and subsequently went to Paraguay. The CIA would, however, Weiss said, keep its ear to the ground and promptly inform everybody if it came up with something. It was Castillo's turn next.
"I'm sorry," he said. "I know nothing about this. I'm just here to listen and learn."
"And the truth here, if I'm to believe what I've heard from these people, is that I know more about this than anyone else. Except, of course, Weiss, and he's lying through his teeth, making at least two of us here who are doing that."
Colonel Dubois was next, and he immediately began to prove that he had come to the meeting prepared to share whatever knowledge the DIA had with the rest of the intelligence community.
"I think I, the DIA, has more knowledge of the situation down there than maybe we should," he began. "The background to that is that our people there, the defense attaché and his assistants, are encouraged to report informally on matters that come to their attention that are not entirely defense-related, but which they feel may be of interest to the DIA. Lieutenant Lorimer, to whom I referred earlier, became friends with Special Agent Timmons, and from him learned a good deal about the DEA operations there, which Lorimer passed on to us. Timmons may well have crossed the need-to-know line there, telling Lorimer what he did, but I think that area's a little fuzzy. If we're here to share intelligence, what's really wrong with our people in the field doing the same thing?"
"It's against the law, for one thing," Milton Weiss said.
"Oh, come on, Weiss," John Walsh of the DEA said. "They all do it, and we all know they do it, and you know as well as I do that there's nothing really wrong with it."
"Good for you, Walsh. I think I like you."
"If I'm getting into something here that perhaps I shouldn't," Dubois said.
"Whatever you heard from your people couldn't really be called reliable intelligence, could it?"
Ellsworth said.
"It would be, in legal terms, hearsay, would it not?"
"I'd like to hear the hearsay," Castillo said.